Awesome, awesome. Last week, when we started the Sermon on the Mount series, I shared that sermon is probably not the right word for these three chapters of the Gospel of Matthew. It's too dense. It's likely that the gospel writer took everything he knew about Jesus' teachings and put it all together right here in these three chapters, and then surrounded it with all the stories that elaborated on the teachings. Some people even believe that what is shared here in the Sermon on the Mount is a sort of a boot camp curriculum that Jesus shared with his disciples over the course of hours and even days. So let's, you and I, approach it that way this morning. Not like we're reading something that happened 2,000 years ago, but like we're willing to let it happen to us. And let's go there. Up on the mountain, expecting something new, different, inspiring, hopeful. Knowing it's kind of a risk to come out to the mountain and hear this man Jesus. He's a rabbi, a teacher, a preacher, and he's good. And he's got quite a following. And it doesn't quite include you yet, but you're open to it. So you sit down and it's spring and really there's no place you'd rather be. You could be working, but it would be working more for taxes than for food. So you listen, open to the possibilities. And the rabbi begins to speak. Oh, the blessedness of you. I know it's hard to believe when even your breathing and waking are taxed by the Romans, when your own Jewish brothers add more to your burden, but you are, and you will be, blessed. And you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your God in heaven. So you're sitting on the mountain and you've heard this before. You know the scriptures, the book of Numbers. The Lord spoke to Aaron. I have given you charge of the offerings made to me, all the holy gifts of the Israelites. I have given them to you and your sons as a priestly portion due to you in perpetuity. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord. But now you're hearing it a little bit differently. Not a covenant of salt, but you are salt and you are light. So come back with me now to the sanctuary. Let's make sense of this. You know how Jesus said the mustard seed is the smallest of all seeds, yet if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you have all the faith you need? And we know that the mustard seed isn't actually the smallest of all seeds. But it's really small. And we, even with our tiny faith, as small as a mustard seed, have all the faith we need. Well, today's message is kind of like that. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its saltiness, it is good for nothing. So we assume the metaphor. You are the salt of the earth. Now, I can talk about flavor and preservatives, and I can talk about pouches of salt that were intermingled to solemnize a covenant. And just like the salt could never be separated out again, the covenant couldn't be broken. But this morning, I want to stick close to the script with the salt losing its saltiness. Now, I think Jesus had lived long enough and had experienced enough to know that he would never taste salt that had lost its saltiness. He might even have asked his mother, Mary, or one of the other Marys, "Does your salt ever lose its saltiness?" No. He might have asked one of his fisherman disciples, "Do you ever go to salt the fish and discover that the salt has lost its saltiness?" No, bro, that never happens. So what did Jesus mean when he said the salt is no good? It is no good for anything but being trampled underfoot when it has lost its saltiness, its flavor. Salt is absolutely one of the most distinctive flavors in the spice cabinet. When something is too salty or needs more salt, we know immediately. Fewer of us know when we need more cumin or more sage or more thyme, but salt is salty. Ordinary table salt, sodium chloride, is a stable compound. It does not lose its saltiness. If it could, it would be worth nothing. So what did Jesus mean when he said, if the salt has lost its saltiness? I think he simply meant that if the salt is no longer itself, no longer recognizable, if the salt is no longer committed to its purpose, if the salt is no longer fulfilling its mission, worst yet, if the salt has been distracted from the mission, it is good for nothing. We are the salt of the earth. Mary and Marlon and Jan and Chris and Alan, Megan and Jasper and Mike and Joe and Naomi and Lionel and you and me and Uprising. We are the salt of the earth. And for just a moment here, post-COVID, rising interest rates, job insecurity, death, dying, and moving away, and all the financial pressures that it has caused, I may have forgotten for just a moment that we are salt. But we know how to be salt. We bring the flavor, we spice things up, and we are as steady and as authentic and as necessary as salt. We are the salt of the earth, and I believe that God's recipe for the world includes a big measure of salt, enough to make our doctors shiver. And we are the light of the world, and you know what's wonderful about that? Not just that here's another beautiful metaphor, we are the light of the world. You, me, Uprising, we are the light of the world. We are the light of the world, and we draw light, and we reflect light, and we crave the light that we know as the light of the world. Not only have I found it really hard to be the light lately, I've found it hard to see the light. Y'all, this is what has filled my vision for a good year now. Financial snapshot for Uprising March 2023. Cash available $100,000. Praise God. Monthly budget $40,000. Monthly income $34,000. We hold a congregational meeting. We fire everybody up. We take another look at the snapshot in June. We have been given an amazing gift. Cash available, a lot. Monthly budget, $40,000. Monthly income, $28,000. And I started to worry. Do we sell a portion of the property if we need to pay off the mortgage? Because that's the only thing that makes a big monthly difference. Do we invest in solar if we might eventually have to pay off the whole property? I wonder how food trucks would look up there near the front. Or should we rent office space? What exactly is the faithful thing to do? It was enough to make your pastor's head explode. I finally decided the devil I didn't know was possibly worse than the devil I did, so I dusted off my Excel skills and put it all in a spreadsheet. And I started with some pretty big expenses that I know are coming. In the near future, we will need to reskin Building 1. They told us their estimate is about $160,000. The good news is we can use it almost the entire time that the work's being done. We only replaced 2 of the 3 AC units in Building 1 about 8 years ago. That means the third one is 23 years old. How many of you want to take a chance on that at home, the 23-year-old AC unit? Solar investment. There's no doubt in your board's mind that it's the right thing to do for many reasons. Around $75,000 after all the rebates and all. A total bill coming. It's coming. $287,000. Okay. So I went to the spreadsheet. And I first started with 4 scenarios that I thought were realistic for us, because the scenario you told us, no, we will never consider, don't even mention it, is selling our property, our whole property. But you said, okay, we could get behind selling a tiny portion at the street front. All right, so scenario A, don't sell 1.1 acres up at the front. Use the cash we have plus our amazing gift for our operating expenses. Scenario B, don't sell the 1.1 acres up front. Keep the gift fully invested because we're drawing interest on it. Scenario C, don't sell the acre at the front. Pay off part of the mortgage and see if we can't get our expenses down. And scenario D, sell 1 acre. And that combined with the gift that we received could pay off the mortgage. All of those scenarios seem possible when I started putting the numbers in, except for B. If we don't sell 1.1 acres and we try to keep the gift invested, we don't have the cash to pay for the necessary expenses that are coming. So I marked scenario B off, and I just started dealing with A and C and D, and I was prepared to know that we had a few months left to operate with our $10,000 a month deficit. But once the numbers actually went into the spreadsheet, what they told me, and I had lots of people check them, is that the worst case scenario, if we choose A or C or D, the worst case scenario is that we have enough dollars to do what we're doing for over 7.5 years. There's no cliff we're about to fall off of. If we just keep doing what we're doing, don't make any changes, keep falling $10,000 a month behind, keep operating on our budget that we've already got set up, which is a bare bones budget, we can keep doing what we're doing for 7.5 years. I had worried that we were going to die and suffer all the way to the end. And my focus narrowed to surviving. It's my job. I take it very seriously. How do we get through this? And I forgot about the blessedness of us And then I remembered what it is to be salt and light. And I said, we're not going to just exist for the next 7.5 years. We're going to be a light on a stand. We're going to be the salt of the earth. And I went to the board and I said, let's budget for growth. Let's budget for all the things we need to put our light on the stand and be salt to the world. And you know them. They said, when do we start? Because once we got rid of all the fear and we cast the images, and I said, no, really, we can budget for growth and build relationships and build this community. And even with a $10,000 deficit every month, we've got 4.5 years. So why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we? We really are salt and light. Not if 1,000 conditions are met. We are salt and we are light. Here's what happened to me. I forgot why I'm here. Y'all, I wanted to be a Presbyterian pastor. And I was going to be one. And you might wonder why your pastor has a stole on this morning that has an obvious sticky note attached. It gave Joe fits, but I told him I wanted to leave it on. Because this week I met with the pastor of Faith Presbyterian Church, where I did my internship and where I was working, when I went before Mission Presbytery to see if I could be a Presbyterian pastor. Well, there's a thing called the Project of Stoles. And what happens is they go into churches and community buildings, and they put all these wires up on the ceiling and on the walls. And they drape over those wires the stoles of all of the ordained people who were kicked out of their churches or who never had a chance to be ordained. And while I was visiting at Faith Presbyterian, the pastor went to the closet and she took out this beautiful red stole. And it has a note that says, this stole was made intended for Karen Thompson's ordination before she was denied ordination by Mission Presbytery due to her sexuality. On Pentecost, we have remembered the way the Spirit moves over time, and we are installing our first gay pastor. Reverend Ken said, they're not going to ordain you. Come back and be salt and light with us. We're zesty and we're twinkly and we're not afraid of nothing. And we are not letting the naysayers trample us underfoot or put a bushel over us, because we have not lost our saltiness and we are light. I'm not here to figure out our financial problems. I'm here because my life's calling is to get up there on that mountain and listen to Jesus and learn from him. And I want to take you by the hand and make sure you come along. And heck, some of you will even be pulling me forward. There is no gloried tomorrow for us to go back to. There is today to celebrate and tomorrow to plan. On Thursday night, our board met, and we came from there knowing we are salt and we are light. And this salt is not staying in the cabinet. It's going to be right there on the counter and in the center of the table. And this light is not going to be hidden under a bushel. In fact, it's time to put it on a stand. In a moment, you're going to see the amazing things happening for our kids and their families. We've invested time and money and resources, and we are building. We've done the work and the planning. We have the people. This is not a shot in the dark. This is not a well-intentioned mess. This is happening. It can be a model for lots of things going forward. Y'all, the world needs a new way of being church, not a new way of raising money, not a new way of preserving institutions. The evidence is all around us. We've been grieving the evidence instead of embracing its meaning. The world needs a new way of speaking about the gospel, sharing the gospel that doesn't depend on threats or judgment or othering. The world needs us. Now, my wife assures me that most of you here today are Enneagram sixes. You can imagine worst case scenarios. But I read that Enneagram 6s are pretty well equipped to handle change as long as there is little ambiguity. 6s are likely to question change and the reasoning behind it, but will be able to handle it once they understand. So let me assure you, I'm not talking about taking anything away from you. If this right here is your sanctuary, your recharge zone, your worship, you won't lose it. It won't even change. But it's time for us to put our light on a stand. Memes were just the beginning. I'm thinking new signage out front and maybe a billboard. If the people can put up a billboard that says, "You think Austin's hot, just wait till you get to hell," then we can put up a healthy alternative. Way back during my election sermon, when you were going to vote on whether I would become your pastor, I read you this poem, and I believe it now like I couldn't believe it then. It's from the Sufi master Hafiz. God, disguised as a myriad of things and playing a game of tag, has kissed you and said, "You're it. I mean, you're really it." Now, it does not matter what you believe or feel, for something wonderful, major league wonderful, is someday going to happen. It's happening. Amen.